webinar, that was more the underlying stuff for this. So that was like amazing, but it's like, whoa, what do we do with this now? We started to get to that, but then people wanted more. Like, how do you apply a lot of the stuff we discussed in the models Dave taught earlier? Now this is about application. So Dave is gonna kind of review a little bit, run through the model, and then we're gonna start applying it. And some of you guys can get on. So start thinking as you're watching and listening. Just raise your hand. And also a big thing is whenever you're chatting on the thingy, do it to panelists and attendees. That way they can see the question. That way everybody else can see your question. And we're gonna call a lot of people up on this and run through your stuff.
Yep. So there's gonna be several places in here where we workshop a little bit. And because we don't have unlimited time here, right? I did this over 2 days when I did it for Baby Bathwater before as a breakout event. So we're not going to have time to go through it in great, great detail. But whatever questions anybody has, feel free to reach out to me individually, and I'll be happy to like give you distinctions or whatever you need that way. So I just want to kind of go through this like we talked about. So we used Out of Shadows, which was this really exploding kind of video piece that came out a couple of months ago that really underlaid a fundamental shift in people's thinking along certain lines, along certain political persuasions and beliefs, right? And so we used that because it was growing very quickly, but it followed this model very carefully. And so we talked about two different models. We talked about the true believer model, and then we talked about the hero's journey. And so now I want to overlay on that sales and marketing, because that's really the application of all of this. And how do you create a cult of customers? How is it that you create these people to become, you know, self-sufficient and also who will continue to push you much further than you would ever push yourself, and quite honestly, much more than you could ever afford to push yourself? They'll do the work for you. So we're going to talk a little bit about that. So I just want to talk about the outline of the true believer model first. So it starts with a market, right? In the terms of sales and marketing, we've got this potential market out here. What that potential market always has is a desire for change, right? There's some innate sense of desire for change that people are having in that market. And identifying that desire for change is one of the most crucial things that you can do. What is it that they need to change? What is it they want to change? What is it they believe about themselves that's not good that has to change? Then there's the potential converts. These are the people, you know, who are, they're engaging with your messaging. They're thinking about this. And they're saying, you know what, maybe there's something to this. I've got to spend more time. I've got to double down, right? And then there's United Action. That's where these are the people are like, yes, I'm buying this thing. I've bought in and I'm a convert. And then there's a beginning and an end, right? That's really where the beginning of the formation of the cult starts. And it's also where it ends. And so I'm going to come back to something Michael and I were talking before we started this process. So I had a slide in here about CrossFit, and I took it out because even for this group, which I think is absolutely loving and caring and all of the things that it is, right? Willing to hear a lot of things or not. What's going on in the world today is highly divisive, right? It's the simplest thing can divide people. And what CrossFit did wasn't that simple. But I had a slide in here talking about how CrossFit followed this model. But what I want to really point out here is there is always an end too. And the end can be the undoing can be something silly, meaningless, but so far out of congruence with what the other people think they believe and what they came to believe as being the truth with a capital T, that it ends the movement in a moment, right? And it can, outside forces can accelerate the end of the movement, which is what's happening to CrossFit right now. So for those of you who don't know, I'm going to explain this, and I'm not explaining it for any other reason than explaining it. I'm not making this a political statement or anything else. CrossFit's founder came out and basically he responded to a comment where somebody said fundamentally, racism is the new, it's the new disease of our times, or something like that. I'm paraphrasing and I'm not getting it exactly right. And the founder of CrossFit responds on Twitter or Facebook and says, COVID, or he doesn't say, he responding to, referring to COVID-19, he says Floyd-19. That's his response in reference to George Floyd and COVID-19, right? So he's tying those two things together. He's trying to be funny, but he's always been somebody who is reactionary. He's definitely the fanatic in this whole model, right? Which we talked about before. And people, you know, people came unglued and they absolutely destroyed him. They are destroying CrossFit as we speak. So like, gyms are divesting themselves of CrossFit certification, CrossFit branding, anything like that. They don't want to be in any way associated with this. So if you do your very best job at this, as long as you can, it will always come to an end, right? New beliefs will take hold. People will drift away. A new leader will arise and they will drift away. Or you'll do something that's so egregious to those people that they will say enough, right? That's the end. If you're lucky, the end won't come until long after you, right? Your brand will outlive you by a long, long time. That's the promise of the business. So let's go back up this funnel just a little bit. So at the desire for change stage, that's the prospecting stage of sales, right? That's when we're saying, hey, look, here's some people. How do we get those people to come in? And we start by sharing beliefs and help people identify with what you believe, right? So we want to share these beliefs that we hold as being true and dear. And we want people to identify with those beliefs and say, yeah, that's like me. I believe that too. Or I've always had that little itch that I wanted to scratch and this feels like that will do it. It's that idealization and awakening that people have, right? That's the only purpose of prospecting. Obviously, it's to find a group of, it's to find this market up here, right? But it's to give them that initial lighting of the fuse, someplace where they can look, pointing them in a direction. Then we move over to the lead nurturing stage or the creating a new identity stage, right? So we give them a name. And in this model, right, Hoffer called them the new poor, right? These are people who are newly poor. They'd had affluence and all these things. Now they're poor and they're being taken apart. And there's lots of ways of looking at this and what's happening right now in America and saying like, that's happening. Names are being given, labels are being given, lines are being drawn, right? People are self-identifying. So as we look at that, we give them a name and we build their belief, right? We help them build the belief of what we're talking about. And we also create a little bit of a sense of us versus them, right? There's those other people, right? Everybody that's not in baby bathwater. And then, you know, there's baby bathwater. And there's definitely a sense of superiority and smartness and all of those kinds of things that begins to develop here. Then there's sales and conversion. It's sacrifice of self. I'm willing to give up my other beliefs, those other things that I always thought was true for this better way. And so the persona goes from being me as a person, an individual marketer, to me as a person who believes in a methodology, right? So if you look at something like ClickFunnels, ClickFunnels is a perfect example of something where it became a movement, right? It became this movement, everybody's doing it, now I'm this, right? And people identify themselves in that way, I'm this kind of person, right? Just like we happily and gleefully identify ourselves as part of
that. Yeah, because Russell came out, there's three other competing products. I remember that when he came out, and they were all better than ClickFunnels.
Right.
And then I don't like Russell, as everybody knows. And I was trying to support those, but man, he built this cult around it and he beat those other three people with better. And I remember supporting the other people, but it was too strong.
And who better than Russell to build a cult following, right? A Mormon missionary who returned and, you know, wanted to do something different. Right. So then after you've converted them, this is conversion. This is the stage where people are, you know, they fall on their knees and they give up and they say, yes, this new way is me. I'm sacrificing myself and my individuality for acceptance by this bigger idea. And then there's the client retention. And this is where the cult really forms. Once people have converted, that's where the cult forms. So there's demonstrated devotion, right? It's converting others. That's how you demonstrate devotion, by going out and saying, this is true. There's also, it's like, so this is like Kevin Kelly's 1,000 True Fans, right? That's the cult. So there's all the other people who will buy your stuff. But Kevin Kelly's point of 1,000 True Fans was that if you have 1,000 True Fans, you can always make 100K no matter what, because they'll buy everything you ever sell. And that's the cult. And the change goes from men of words to men of action here. And there's a misunderstanding in this process. So it's men of words, fanatics, men of action. And when we look at this, men of action emerge, but they're not necessarily the faithful, they're the lawful. They're the people who lay down the law. They say this is the way it has to be, right? They start pushing very, very hard for structure and strategy and all of this. And if you fall outside of that, you don't fit. You have to be excommunicated. You have to be removed. It was the men of law who kicked me out of the church, not the cult, right? So it was that. So that's this process and how it looks a little bit in terms of marketing. So I take the essential me, my beliefs, and I make more and become more through sacrifice. People join cults and other specialized communities not to conform, but to become more of who they really are. But if you tell them that's what you're doing, you're becoming more of who you really already were, they'll reject that outright. But they'll join the group because it feels right. Joining cults, joining groups, becoming parts of movements happening very, very much because of emotional content and, you know, cognitive issues more than it does the idea that I want to just belong to that group for that reason, right? So they join these cults and other specialized communities not to conform, but to become more of themselves. And I want to give an example of how an unfolding starts like this. And then this is going to lead into our first workshop. So I want to show you how simple it is to identify with something for people who just have this sense, and this is Harley Davidson. So we can make some assumptions about people who could be Harley riders, right? We can make some assumption that they're people who are outside of the traditional norms of society, that they see the world a little bit different. They see themselves as being wildly independent, and they see themselves as being able to make decisions that other people are unwilling to make. They see themselves as outlaws, right? Outlaws and to some extent, for a long time, outcasts. But let's play this and watch this. And for any reason you guys can't hear it, let me know.
We believe in going our own way, no matter which way the rest of the world is going. We believe in bucking the system that's built to smash individuals like bugs on a windshield. Some of us believe in the man upstairs. All of us believe in sticking it to the man down here. We believe in the sky, and we don't believe in the sun. We believe in freedom. We believe in dust, tumbleweeds, buffalo, mountain ranges, and riding off into the sunset. We believe in saddlebags, and we believe that cowboys had it right. We believe in refusing to knuckle under to anyone. We believe in wearing black because it doesn't show any dirt or weakness. We believe the world is going soft, and we're not going along with it. We believe in motorcycle rallies that last a week. We believe in roadside attractions, gas station hot dogs, and finding out what's over the next hill. We believe in rumbling engines, distance the size of garbage cans, fuel tanks designed in 1936, freight train-sized headlights, chrome and custom paint. We believe in flames and skulls. We believe life is what you make it, and we make it one hell of a ride. We believe the machine you sit on can tell the world exactly where you stand. We don't care what everyone else believes. Amen.
By leaving them behind, I become us. That's the fundamental idea. That is the best. I keep looking for a better video to use than this one to demonstrate how a cult forms, how it exemplifies itself, and how it grows, and how a cult brand forms. There's nothing better that I've found yet. They go through the complete process in that one video of exactly what we do. A single person becomes us, and us defines me as an individual. And then my individuality becomes the group, and the group becomes this movement. And then the movement leaves behind the individual, only to go to the next place where they become the group again. By leaving them behind, I become us. That's the important part about this. And that's what you are trying to create when you're trying to create a cult of customers. You're trying to create that sense of their individuality is defined by us, and by leaving themselves behind, they become us. So we do that. So we start with a manifesto, and Michael, I'd love for you to talk about your experience with the manifesto for a second. And then I'm going to explain it, and then we're going to workshop it.
Yeah, Dave, like 5 years ago, we had a 20-person baby bathwater event up in the mountains where Dave ran us through this whole thing. Yeah, the manifesto, without the manifesto, you have nothing, because it's really what you stand for. And when you have that, then all your messaging can become congruent with that. And I was telling Dave before this call is we got so busy, we did it, we were all excited, and then we forgot about it. And then because we got so busy running events, and then now we have time, you know, obvious reasons, no events. And now we're kind of, let's get settled in with our messaging. And then we were like racking our brains. We found the old manifesto that we wrote 5 years ago. And we think exactly the same thing. Nothing's changed. And now we have this blueprint for even the way Berg's been writing the emails now. You might have noticed a change. It's now more on brand. And without the manifesto, we have no brand. We just kind of were willy-nilly. And now we're unified. And now now if we hire a writer, if we want to do a video, now we have this. And it's the light that allows you to do everything else from. And it's hard to do. We did it, actually, but then it takes time. But now I wish we would have 4 or 5 years ago kept to it and been more consistent. And it's powerful because now it's easier to write, and I think our materials are better. And, yeah, so I think it's just the core of everything you do. And the big thing, like, we came up with is we believe in contradiction because that's what we believe. And now when we write, we can be funny by always contradicting ourselves. That's kind of one of our mottos now, because that's what we do believe.
And it's easy to believe in something that everybody believes in. It's very difficult to believe in something and build something around it that people don't. And believing in contradiction, that everything is contradictable, right? Mm-hmm. There's not, I mean, like I said to Michael earlier, just kind of as a joke, but just to see what he would say too, I said, you know, yeah, you'll contradict anything, even if it's 100% true.
Right.
And Michael said,
yeah, of course. Yeah. And then, yeah, and also this Harley thing.
100% true. Nothing.
Got to be a part of us. Yeah. I mean, contradiction wakes up the brain too.
Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. And people are always looking, you know, people are pattern matching, or they're looking for a difference in the pattern. What's different from the pattern that they're matching, right? And they're looking for that, and that draws attention. And in today's very, very over-communicated world, you need to break the pattern a little bit in order to get people's attention and make them look someplace else. And the manifesto does that. So a manifesto is nothing more than a written statement that describes the policies, goals, and opinions of a person or group. And this is really important because when we talk about a brand, right, and we talk about brand voice, we put a lot of things around a brand voice and say, oh, it's these colors and it's this thing and it's this promise that we make. But what it's missing in most cases for those brands that don't grow as big as they could is it's missing the belief. What are the things, the core beliefs that we hold to be true and incontrovertible that we will not change for in any reason? Like I can 100% believe that before Michael would agree to say that, you know what, there are these 10 things that are 100% true and unchangeable, and I have to accept those for Baby Bathwater to exist, Baby Bathwater would cease to exist. Before Michael would say, that's true, there are these 10 things that 100% are incontrovertible, right?
That's the difference between when you see offers, like let's go to the online page. There's offers that work, and you can make a lot of money for a year or two, but without this, you're never going to go to the next thing. I think a lot of people are already there. They already know how to do this. This isn't about like what your Google ad. There's your tactic, right? But to go to the next level, to transcend, you have to have something like this that's real. And also, you know, the brands who are just use the focus group to come up with this, they won't last either.
Right. This has to be something that you fundamentally believe in and you're unwilling to back away from no matter what, you know, and in it, going back to the CrossFit example, like they were unwilling to, you know, back away from Pukey the Clown, right? When people were killing themselves by, you know, destroying their livers or their kidneys, right? In the beginning, like they didn't back away from it. They didn't say, don't do it. They just said, do it carefully. And so like they didn't back away from it. So this written statement becomes very important, and you have to be very honest with yourself about what you believe about your product, what you believe about your service, what you believe that, what opinions that the people who are going to get the most out of your product or service must embrace and embody in order to get it. And if you don't tell them what their opinions are, then you're not leading them. You're allowing them to sit on the fence. So those people that are sitting on the fence can never become a cult because they're too easily swayed any way the wind blows. You have to get them off the fence. That's a polarization, and they have to accept these ideas and beliefs that you have. So what is a manifesto? It's a vision of how the world should be. It should be polarizing and activating, right? And that's that core piece. And I think, Michael, and I could be wrong, but I think like that idea of, you know, everything, you can challenge everything, right? That came out of this idea. This is how the world should be. Like, we shouldn't just accept things as being the way they are, and that's it, and they can't be changed. And so that's where the fundamental part of this idea comes from. So it starts with a polarizing, activating vision of how the world should be. And it sets a clear line in the sand that we believe this and not that, right? It's not that we feel strongly both ways and never argue, quite the opposite. We believe this thing to be true. We don't believe in the rest of it. And Harley Davidson, when you listen to that, and everybody should go back and watch this thing a bunch of times. I'll include the link to the video too, just in case you can't see it on my PowerPoint slides. But listen to it over and over again. They're defining us versus them. They're introducing the devil and telling you what to avoid and what to fight against, right? The man. And all of these things happen because they sat down and said, what do we believe in? It defines who belongs and who doesn't. Right? Because what we oftentimes try and do as marketers is trying to be as inclusive as possible. We want to make the world as big as it can be. We want to make the universe of prospects as large as it can be. And of course you do. But the reality of it is you can't ever do that unless you define who belongs and who doesn't. And unless people can see that this is the only path for them, they'll constantly be pulled in different directions, which we don't want them to do. We want them to stay straight on this path. Yep. It identifies an enemy, an obstacle that they have to overcome, whether it's a way of thinking, whether it's a competitor, whether it is a way that you've always done things, common knowledge, whatever it is, you have to identify the enemy. But again, people are unwilling to clearly identify the enemy, because if they do, somebody might challenge them. Somebody might attack them on social. Somebody might do something, right? Maybe somebody won't buy from them because they don't like them. They're alienating a potential market. You have to. There's just not a choice. Do you guys alienate markets, Michael? I mean, like, are there a lot of people who don't belong in baby bathwater?
Most people, yeah. That's the whole goal.
Right, exactly. So you guys aggressively do this, you know, probably more than some people. It identifies, or it defines behavior. I should do this, not that. It gives me a way of comporting my life, and it gives me a way of comporting my actions, right? So I have to act this way because I believe in this thing. So when you look at things like diets, when you look at things like supplements, when you look at things like personal development, when you look at things like pillows, right? No matter what it is, defines my behavior. I have to do this thing this way if I want to get this result, because this is the kind of person that I am. And it demands action. I have to act now. Like, I can't ignore this anymore. I can't not do this in this moment, because it would be the most wrong thing to do of all.
To show an example of a product, let's bring Christopher Walker in, because I think out of everybody here, he's done this work. And I think Baby Bathwater is like a group, so it's obvious. But let's do it with the product company. Can we bring Chris in real quick, Natalie? Because I want him to run through the manifesto. I think he's done it. And I think it'll be cool to watch you guys go, because I think it's a better application with a product company, because most people here are product companies. Run not Baby Bathwater, because Baby Bathwater is so weird. Let's do it with a...
Yeah, for sure.
Hey, Chris.
Hey, can you hear me all right?
Yeah. So, Chris, just kind of walking through this, have you actually created your manifesto?
We have an underlying philosophy that has been active for a few years, and it is basically the manifesto. Yeah.
Perfect. So, what would you say? So, would you just explain to everybody who's watching first, like, what is your product? What do you sell? What's your basic thesis?
Okay, so the brand is Umzu. It's currently only, you know, we only sell supplements currently, but we have a big vision for how to roll it forward, which I could talk about into, like, you know, a lot more than that. And it all revolves around this kind of thinking. Mm-hmm. And essentially the vision the brand itself is underlined by the Thermo philosophy, which is like a true philosophy of health, because, which we discussed on the last call a little bit, you know, about like the idea of if you ask anybody what is healthy, it's actually like a surprisingly nebulous thing, and you'll get a ton of different answers. Mm-hmm. Even the WHO says health is the absence of disease, which isn't helpful, right? So we defined our own philosophy about what health truly is. And it is inherently polarizing because it polarizes people that don't believe that same thing, who are on like other diets that aren't in line with it, or they're doing other things. So it's really been extremely helpful. And that was, that idea came about after reading Blair Warren's book about it was like that cult class that he did.
Yeah.
And then I realized, I was like, well, we don't have, at that time, we didn't have an underlying philosophy. And it just was like every other supplement company can be pulled into trends, right? Mm-hmm. Like keto or vegan or paleo. And it just kind of, you see these rises and falls of these movements throughout the health industry. But we were like, well, why don't we don't really believe in any of that stuff as being healthy. So we need to define our own thing. And that's where we came up with Thermo. And basically I wrote like a whole course about it, and the course is up. And then the book, like the official book, is coming out this year. So that'll be even better to have like a physical thing.
What is your polarizing definition of health versus everything else?
So it's based on just like real biochemistry, which nobody else apparently uses. And it's the idea that a healthy body can't be truly healthy with if it's deficient in micronutrients, being like vitamins, minerals, and amino acids, and even gases like CO2 and oxygen and those balances. So that's what the course explains. And then the secondary effect of it is you know, you can't be truly healthy if you're hormonally imbalanced. So if you're deficient or hormonally imbalanced, which both of which affect one another, then you're not truly healthy. So that's like the real definition of health. And it's all backed up endlessly. And it's, you know, once people believe that, they're like, oh, that makes so much sense. And it because it's very logical. The other aspect to it is when you get into the weeds with like what that actually means when the rubber meets the road, in terms of like what foods people should be eating or what they should be avoiding, and kind of the do this, not that aspect of defining behavior, it starts to become obvious that all these like health foods that are very common in other diets are not healthy whatsoever within that paradigm of health. So if you believe that that's the definition of health, then you have to actively reject those other things.
Right.
Right. So that's really where it turns into, you know, like on YouTube, you know, a lot of vegans aren't very stoked about me. One guy, like a big vegan YouTuber, did a 2.5-hour live cast about like everything he hates about me. So it's definitely, there's that sort of thing. Yeah. I was like, he must, you know, really love it. 2.5 hours. So it's definitely polarizing also to like the keto group, because, you know, through that definition of health, you have to accept the fact that a glucose metabolism is naturally the most efficient and healthy metabolism for the body, for a cell. And so that's actively like another group that isn't stoked about it. But it's interesting too, because like when you believe it, you have to reject those ideas because you just don't.
That's the conversion, right? Like they have that moment where they're like, oh, I get it now. Like all that other stuff was wrong and this is right.
Yeah, because now they have a definition that they agree with. And I think the definition of health is like the fundamental aspect to the whole thing, because all these other brands or diets and that sort of thing just literally do not define the most simple question. And then they go with the wind, and then they end up having a lot of like Me Too products. Mm-hmm. A lot of, you know, you can find anywhere really.
Who belongs and who doesn't?
Right.
Yeah.
That's a great question. Who does belong and who doesn't?
Who belongs? So really anybody that's willing to accept that idea. And the people that don't accept it, they don't really fit with the most active group that we have.
I want to unpack that just for a little bit, because that's a core fundamental piece right there. When we ask, you know, who accepts it, right? And who's it not for? And he said, well, it's for anyone who accepts our core thesis, our core idea, this premise, this underlying belief that we have. and it's not for everybody else, right? So he's not saying he's right. I mean, obviously you are saying you're right and all of those things, but he's not coming out and saying like, I'm right, you're wrong. He's just saying, here is a definition of health that you haven't understood. And if you choose not to understand it, that's okay too. If you choose to continue to be keto or vegan or whatever it is that you are, if you choose to continue to follow that path, that's totally fine. This is not for you and you can't have it. You're one of the benighted, one of the unwashed, you know, you can just stay over there and die, right? While the rest of the people become healthy. And while the rest of the people achieve, you know, this definition and promise of health. But, and I'm sure you say that in not as blatant a way, you know, in your marketing, in your emails, in your ads, all of those kinds of things, right? You're driving that whole idea home, but it is that significant line in the sand that you draw that says, look, you can either believe this or not, I don't care, but you know what? I do have some proof, biochemistry, that says this is true. You can choose to, you know, you can choose to have any interpretation of biochemistry you want, but you're wrong. This is the right one, right? It's that willingness to stand up and say, this is right, that's wrong. And it defines the behavior. I should do this, not that, right? And so I love it that somebody spent 2.5 hours ranting about you on YouTube, right? That means yeah. You need it, right? Like you're the thing that people need to fight against, because the harder they fight against it, the more the unpersuaded say, I want to know what that's about. And a lot of those people are looking for something to believe in. And this is what they can believe in. So who is the enemy in this?
So it's actually more so the, you know, it's not the other diets, the competing diets. We actually go for, you know, it's really big pharma and like the medical establishment as it exists, because there's so much, well, first off, it's like a real, you know, pain point for me personally. And it was like, I had a ton of issues with my brain tumor back when I was first diagnosed with it. And then it just was like this crazy story against all of that. And just like so many things were so backwards in my experience. And then just over the years, I started to realize that literally everybody has those same experiences with that establishment, and that it's really not set up to help people essentially with like, you know, chronic issues and real health issues. And so that's been the big, you know, the villain really, cause it's, it really is. And then the more we dig into it with, like, we're doing a docuseries, releasing one every 3 or 4 weeks right now. And it's going through all the backstories of certain topics and that sort of thing. And just kind of blows your mind, like how backwards everything is. And we actually refer to it as the upside down, like Stranger Things. You're living in the upside down. So yeah, it's really that.
Almost every supplement company has big pharma as an enemy. It seems like you have a different enemy. I mean, that's just an assumed enemy almost, right? Because every supplement company I know of, all the alt doctors and all that, big pharma is the enemy already, right? So they're kind of preaching to the converted on that one, on the enemy. What other enemy is there to distinguish yourselves from the other supplement companies who have big pharma has an enemy?
I mean, it's kind of beyond it. Like what I would say is like, I would translate it into more, it's like an attitude against the system as it exists, period. Maybe more transcendent than just like big pharma itself, but it's like a very punk rock attitude of, and that's what, but it's more subtle. It's not as overt, which I think it's the most powerful music genre in general as a philosophy, because it translates into every type of music. You can listen to jazz, you can listen to rap, metal, folk, anything that is like influenced by punk, you can tell because of the way that it's set up. And it's so much more interesting. So I kind of think it's more like that type of attitude that really pervades what we're doing.
Punk is definitely a cult culture too, right? So it's definitely one that follows the model. So I would also argue too that probably your other enemy is weak thinking, it's conformance, it's all of those kinds of things, right? It is that punk manifesto, right? We're like uniquely different in ourselves. It's that sense of, you know, individualism and all of that, right? It's not following the fads. It's not doing, you know, this thing, then that thing, then this thing, then that thing. And, you know, because that's what the medical establishment really benefits from, is you making all of these choices and not actually creating real health, right? So that's another possible enemy. What do you say that people should do and not do? Like, what are the two or three things that they absolutely have to do, and what are the two or three things they absolutely shouldn't do?
I mean, you basically, like, what you have to do is correct your deficiencies. So if you don't do that, or the way that I set it up in terms of, like, just the line of thinking, it makes a lot of sense. It's like, if you accept, it's a series of acceptance of, you know, increasingly more detailed ideas, right? And the simplest one is that definition, the thesis of health. And then the subsequent movement of it is like taking both of those things, the micronutrient deficiencies and the hormonal balance. And then, and those are the two things that you must work toward actively. And it's along a spectrum, which, you know, is like thermo is the definition of the most perfect state of health as like an ideal. And it's this concept that, you know, like when you're born as a baby, you're at the most perfect state you'll ever be at. And you degenerate, actively degenerate over your life because of certain, we call it activators and blockers. So the blockers that you consume or are exposed to environmentally take you away from the state of thermo. And then you can work your way back toward it along the spectrum by eliminating blockers and introducing activators back into your life. So that's really like the motion that's going on. And then if you're doing anything that, you know, quite just bluntly, it's like if anything causes micronutrient deficiencies that's known and that you know of, and you're actively doing it, you're not doing it right. You know, you shouldn't do that. And then if you're causing hormonal imbalance, again, same thing.
Those are the sins.
Yeah, it's super clear. I think if I'm looking at what you're doing, it's kind of like, if you follow this, you have common sense. I've heard it 6 times. If you don't, you don't. Because you're fighting lack of common sense. You're like, this is fucking simple. I mean, this is, it's in all the books. Why, like, what's this fucking keto shit? And like, to me, I think you are pro common sense. And I would weave that everywhere because it's simple. And you're not saying I'm so smart. You're saying, this is common sense, guys. You've been fooled. So to me, if you're with us, who belongs is a person with common sense. Who doesn't belong is somebody who doesn't. And that's what I think the big thing is. And that's what I go with. That's what got me too. Is, remember, I was keto and you were like, yeah, yeah. You were your little soft, subtle way. And after a while, I was like, I'm a guy. I have common sense. I'm not fucking smart. I got common sense. And I'm not a guy with not common sense. I can't do this not common sense thing anymore. It's more of an identity shift than what your diet was, or the health thing.
So more, when you acted on that, Michael, what happened?
Started getting healthier. It worked, because then the evidence was it works when you follow it. But the thing is, the common sense is what got me, because I don't like to be a guy that doesn't have common sense, because I'm an egomaniac that way. That's an identifier. You know, that's part of my identity, is I'm not dumb, and if it's the truth, I'll believe it, you know. And I'm
that's what caused you to take action, because you identified, like, look, I have common sense. This other thing hasn't been working. This makes sense to me. So I can't do anything else other than act.
Chris challenged my common sense, and I don't want to be a guy that's not known as open-minded. Like, will you follow? Will you listen to common sense or not? Are you that bullheaded dumbass who won't listen to common sense? That's what got me, not the health stuff. So
yeah, I think it's
that more than anything. And I think that's a big driver. And you're like, don't have to be a genius. This is common sense. Here it is. Anyway, that's my thought on it.
Yeah, that's perfect, actually. That's so much bigger than big pharma or whatever.
Yeah, you have to distinguish the next level after you. You know, you get the customers who hate big pharma, but then you're with a sea of assholes who are against big pharma, and you don't want to be with them either.
Mm-hmm. And I would say it might even be uncommon sense, right? Because that's what everybody says, right? Like, look, keto just makes sense, right? It's just common sense. If you eat more of this, you do more of that, blah, 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 right? But it's the uncommon sense that makes sense. That's more of the punk side of that. So this is Patagonia's manifesto. and you can read it, but it says, we prefer the human scale to the corporate, vagabonding to tourism, the quirky and the lively to the toned down and flattened out. We used to call our own world of alpinists and surfers a dirtbag culture, of temp jobs and long summers, of forage meals and tribal travel that followed the seasons, from summer climbs in Yosemite to Baja's winter surf breaks to spring kayaking. And if many of us now work more than we climb and care more about our families than for bumming about, we still sound our appeal to the dirtbag within, the need for the wild dirtbag spirit to survive in our eat out culture, right? Very clear. And it appeals to, it's the same, this is, if you changed Patagonia to punk rock, it would be the same thing. If you turned Patagonia to baby bathwater, it would have that same feel. If you turned it to Chris's company, it would have that same feel. It's that sense of identifying that inner self that you know is different, right? That you can identify with and say, yeah, that's right. That's me. I get it, right? It's uncommon sense, or it's common sense, whatever you want to call it, that appeals to me. That's who I am. So let's talk about the hero's journey then just a little bit, because it applies also to this. So in the hero's journey, we've got the ordinary world, the call to adventure, meet with a mentor, the road back, and the elixir. So at the top of the funnel here, this is where we're sharing beliefs. We're helping people self-identify with what you believe, that idealization and awakening again, right? And then it's coming over here and it's giving them a name, building the belief, us versus them, right? It's the same process. So what you really realize is the true believer is on this heroic journey, right? This process is the same. And when you map those two things together and you make the true believer the hero, and the hero becomes the true believer, right? Mm-hmm. So that's all we're trying to do in this whole process. All right, so let's talk about creating your cult. So we start here in the ordinary world, right? This is where these are your prospects. This is where they're bumbling along on a day-to-day basis, you know, thinking about these things or thinking about their diet. They notice they're overweight, whatever it is, but they've heard so much conflicting advice, they don't know what to do, or they've fallen down on one of them and they become vegan or keto, right? Which those are really good definitions, because they've caused people to polarize, right? I'm vegan, I'm vegetarian, I'm keto, I'm this, I'm that, right? It gives them that identity. So it starts with bias and beliefs. So it taps into the desire for change and the fear of missing out, right? So when there's a desire for change, people are looking for something to believe in, and they also want something that they're worried that they might miss out on if they don't take advantage of it. So it's the ease of sharing a worldview and beliefs they accept to play to their cognitive biases. So what you're really trying to do is you're trying to make it easy for people to believe these things. You're trying to look at cognitive biases and say, what is it that people are already doing, and how can I present this information in a way that allows it to slide right in without them questioning it at all? They just accept it as being true, right? And then you give them a name, right? You start calling these things names. You create a language so that they can identify themselves in the dark, right? That's what that part is. So people can start talking about these things and they can hear somebody else talk about it and say, I know exactly what they're talking about. Then there's the meeting with the mentor, right? And that's lead nurturing. That's where you're creating the new identity. You're giving people this education, right? That allows them to say, yes, that's like me. That's where you introduce them to the man of words in Hoffer's model. And so in the beginning, the man of words is probably the founder, right? It's the person who started this company, and they're the ones that are out preaching the gospel, telling the truth, and all of that. But it may change from them relatively quickly. There may be another man of words who arises from the community or who arises from within the organization, right? It's a role model, and you become better by joining the organization, right? By joining this process, you become better. So the minute you stop doing keto and the minute you start following Thermo, you become better because you joined, right? You've got this new acceptance of knowledge that you can see a result for. Then the conversion happens by the sacrifice of oneself to become exclusive, right? That's where you become Thermo. That's where you become keto. That's where you become vegan. You make this decision and you fall down on one side of it, right? It's when you decide that this kind of supplement is better than that kind of supplement. It's where you decide that this car is better than that car, whatever it is, right? And as soon as they make that conversion, that's where the love bombing starts. That's when you start demonstrating to people over and over and over again how smart they are for making the decision, right? Once they've purchased your product, once they've bought into the idea, you love bomb them and you constantly remind them how special they are. And then the client retention, this is where the cult forms, is It's the rise of the fanatics, the evangelists, right? It's all these people who come out and start saying, you have to be a CrossFitter, you have to be a vegan, you have to be keto, you have to be Atkins, right? They start using these words as verbs, right? And they become vehement in their defense of it. And then it's the birth of the leader. Out of that will come somebody else, right? It's a new leader. And there will become, the, you know, out of the fanatics will come the men of action, right? Those men of action who say, this is how the process works. You can't fall outside of the process. They'll call everybody out and say, you're falling outside the process. I know you think you know better than Chris, but you don't. So follow the law, stay in line, right? Do this thing this way and you'll get the results. Anything else is wrong, don't do it, right? So it's law versus faith, right? It's not faith anymore, it's the law. Because up here, they have faith, right? They believe that you're telling the truth, right? They have some faith that what you're telling. And as they start to get results, it becomes more and more and more. But then someplace down here, they start to have just a little bit of doubt, right? Should that doubt happen? Well, that's where the law hander comes out. Yeah. No, stay the straight and narrow. Do the thing. Don't change. If you don't, you're out. You can't be a part of this, right? And that's the important part. And this is where people fail to create a cult by being unwilling to say some people don't belong. Like, you just can't be a part of this. I in the very beginning of Baby Bathwater, I remember thinking to myself, like, will Hollis and Michael actually kick people out? Will they actually, you know, not just not invite them back, but literally kick them out? And you guys did. Like, you kicked people out of events. Like, you were hardcore about this, right? So there was no sense of, like, oh, no, they're not living their brand. They're not living their belief. They did it, right? And it's the same kind of thing. Like, people will, you know, like, so people probably know who Ramit Sethi is. Now, I pissed him off one day and he kicked me out of his group forever, you know, like publicly, like, you're banned, you're banished, you're whatever. And I'm like, right. Okay.
Right. Great. Good. Awesome. Right.
Yeah, good for you. But, you know, it only gives me more power now because I'm already the cultist. So, you know, right. I just point out that you're an idiot in controlling people. So it does, you know, like you got to be very careful down there though, because it, just like CrossFit, like, he could have made a very miscalculated decision with me. And if I was really, like, really, really harmful, I could have taken a strong stab at him and really hurt him, but I didn't really care. It didn't matter to me. So creating your cult, back to the top of the funnel here, you're establishing a difference from the norm. So that's the thing. Like, people have their ordinary world. They have this thing, but they need to see what's different from what I've commonly believed and what's different from what everybody else is saying. Because at the end of the day, a thing that everybody believes, right, is that they're uniquely individual. Like, I have my own sense of self. I'm not subverting myself to everyone, even though we do it every day, right? But we have this sense that I'm the outlier and nobody can ever fool me. And people often ask me that about being persuaded. They'll say, you must be the hardest guy in the world to persuade. I'm like, no, I'm actually the easiest, right? Because I'm open to, you know, I'm like open to being persuaded and changing my mind because I want to see how it happens. I probably come back quicker than most people. But
top of the funnel, since we're kind of running out of time. So on digital, because a lot of people hear digitally.
Yep.
I think that's what Umzu does differently. It's funny because we're working with them on this influencer thing. And then we're going to do their model because they can handle it, is most product companies market their product, right? And they do all these amazing things on Google, and they can retarget, and they can do really good at sales. And they can get good numbers for a while, and maybe get them into their world later. I've noticed what Umzu does is they market to videos, not the product.
Right.
Then they retarget from there. So you guys start, correct me if I'm wrong, with not a belief, I mean, but you start with non-ordinary world with your marketing. They market to videos and statements, and then retarget the products. Is that correct, Chris?
Yeah, we on the top of the funnel, we sell ideas. Right. And because
you're developing an ideology here, that's what you're actually doing.
Yeah, it's like the idea of, like, once it's seen, it can't be unseen. And then the results that we're getting from this are far better than we used to get when we just ran straight product.
A lot of people wanted to know tactics. Since there's like 10 minutes left, I want to go into that is, so we've done this, and there's a lot that we could go. I mean, this is why you did a 3-day workshop with us. There's a lot here, but I think people are starting to get it. It's a lot of work to create, but assuming you have this, the way you market top of funnel now is different. If you created this, you can do it. If you haven't, you can't. Everybody else has to grow. Here's my pill, and they have to go, you know, Kukumar.
And to make an argument about why it's better than something else versus developing an ideology and establishing beliefs, which you can do through video, you can do through a piece of content, right? A really strategic piece of content.
The big thing is that, but it's digital marketers or it's radio, TV, instead of doing like what everybody does, and they do well. Again, I'm not saying that doesn't work. It works for money, but it doesn't work for building a big brand that you can end up really changing things with and making gobs, not just a little, is even at the beginning, instead of going for curcumin, or you guys could go for ED or whatever, like they have the products for it, but they market with the top of the funnel is part of the manifesto and ideas, and that's the difference that this makes. So I want to... Chris can maybe talk more.
When you look at this, it's the content marketing, it's long form sales letters, it's influencers, right? It is that non-traditional sort of place of starting, right? It's starting with the bigger idea first, developing that. Then it's going into more content, PR, SEO, ads, all of those things. Then in the conversion piece, it's webinars, emails, remarketing, events. And then finally, where the cult forms, it's definitely personalized email, it's masterminds, it's events again, it's the revivals, right? Where people can come and be a part of that. You can also begin the funnel right here, right? Because usually these people are leading one of these things. And so even if you put these people clear back at the top of your funnel, right? And let them be those outliers and drive back to you, that can be one of the most powerful things you can ever do, right? But then it's developing a place for them to live, Slack channels, Facebook groups, whatever it is, you know, and giving them ways of clearly identifying themselves, swag, like how much baby bathwater swag is out there now. I don't even know, but you know, but I do know that I miss some and it pisses me off. Right. And, you know, so it's all of that. So right. Look at this thing, like, where can you go back and where can you set up this differentiation at the very beginning? It starts with your beliefs. So, you know, let's look at, I'm just going to go through this fast. So it's invitation to a webinar. This is steps to marketing conversion, love bombing, tell them how smart they are, dangle a prize. You found the truth or the secret, extract agreement that they want the prize, right? People often miss that. Shutting down the dissent by making a time sensitive offer, establishment of guilt. Do you want to keep failing? Right? Carrot and stick. You get a one-time offer, pass it and never get it again. Join your friends in our mastermind event, special training, rally, etc. Right? You're giving them those places. But then let's look at how Harley does it. So they invent them to a learn to ride event. Very innocuous, very simple. Love bombing. They tell them what an individual they are. You're so smart because you came. They dangle a prize. The Harley life, not the bike. They're not going to give you a bike. They're going to give you a life.
I mean, there's a fucking engine in it. It doesn't matter what the thing is. It's crazy.
No, you just want the life. That's it. They extract agreement that you want this. Don't you agree? You want this life. They shut down dissent by making these time special offer or time sensitive offers, special pricing or financing or whatever it is. Establishment of guilt. Do you want to go back to normal now that you've seen the truth? Do you want to go back to the way you ate before? Now that you know the truth, are you going to be a conformist and just get sucked back into the matrix? Carrot and stick, come to an event. But if you don't, you're going to miss an exclusive event. Right? So you won't get the swag, right? You missed that one piece of swag because you didn't join Baby Bathwater that year, right? Local rides, Sturgis, all the things that they can do that way, right? That's it. So this is one of the first workshops. And again, we'll go through this, but it's establishing your difference from the norm, right? What is the thing that you can do to truly establish your difference from the norm? And then an ideology. What is the clear belief system that you want to create for people? What must they have? Then you recruit the connectors and influencers who are the first believers, but who have an audience that they can share this with because they want to be the first ones to share this breaking new idea that they just found out about because you differentiated. Exclusivity, you limit the access in the beginning, right? Only a certain number of people can get a hold of this thing. And then you love bomb them, make them feel appreciated. You make them feel like they're discovering a new sense of self, right? You keep underlying over and over and over again these ideas that you set up in the very beginning, that video, that core idea around the manifesto. Then you introduce the devil, right? Who is this person that we're all fighting against? The man, right? Who is that? You connect and you share your ideas. Then you let go and let the community leaders lead because this is where the cult forms, right? So you let go and you let the community leaders lead. This is where the evangelists are born and live. Now, there's still going to be the man of action there who's going to put them back on the path, right? You're still the man of action in charge of your company. You're not just letting people run with, you know, your company wherever they want to go. You're putting them back on path, but you encourage leaders to be visionary and share, right? And so you prompt them, you warm them up, right? So I would argue that even people that Michael and Hollis put on these webinars, that's a way of letting leaders be visionary and share and support and expand the baby bathwater message without them saying, we're good, you know? They're not saying that. They're just demonstrating opportunities for you to learn more. So what I want everybody to do is, because we didn't have a lot of time to go through this, I want you to go back through this and just look at each one of these things and say, how do I do this? In what ways am I doing it now? And in what ways could I do it better? And if you have questions, just call me or email me or ask in the group, and I'll be happy to answer.
So, yeah, like in the evangelical, so I saw Chris. You finally have your so Chris did the, he has so Chris started this little thermo group, right? Without, and he didn't sell anything. It's crazy. He never does. People in the group do. It's get in there, and it's just all knowledge and fun. And then the group, whenever an Umzu product comes out, they all get behind it. They all give each other advice. Chris doesn't even talk. Then he's did an ambassador program, right? So he's starting that now. And then I guess if I had one piece of feedback, and I told you, like, got to get these chicks in because it's not just a men's group. More people, you need a common sense female ambassador or two, right? If that's what you're recruiting for, to be your messenger there, so then to widen it out. Because like Harley, you saw their video. It had men, women, black people, people with babies, right? So you can expand the demographics who have the same belief, which is a belief system and not a demographic. Instead of men, I mean, I wrote you that email yesterday, Chris, about having, you know, let's, it's got to be a way to use it as a strength. It's just common. So,
we have starting divisive along demographic lines, right? And you just say this is for men or this is only for women, unless it's obviously only for women because of some unique thing that women have that men don't. It's not, it doesn't work because it works against you, because just like we're, you know, just like we're seeing now what's happening in the country, that kind of divisiveness is destructive and it blows things up.
Yeah, we had, 420 people, 420 something people apply like within a couple days to be ambassadors, but the women applications weren't great. They weren't like extremely willing to like do video compared to the guys. The guys were just like gung-ho. So
right now that brand is just seducing, you know, it's just fostering it. Because it's really a belief system, not a demographic. Because all your products are worked just for women, you know, not because I'm deep in the.
You have to go back up to this section and you have to recruit the connectors and influencers who can do that, right? You have to be very decisive about who you want, and then you have to go after them and convert them, right?
I'll tell you what we did. You might reach out. So Baby Bathwater, remember, is like 90% men and then some women, and they're okay. And then Jenny Thompson, I had known forever. She was on here earlier. She'd love this. And she was like, I'm not going to anything you make, you know. We're too good of friends. I know you too well. You're just a dumb drunk. You know, I know you're a good marketer, but no way this is going to be good. God, I invited her every time. And finally, I got her there. And she did love it. And then she became our ambassador. Like she built the women. Basically, the whole female group in Baby Bathwater was built with Jenny Thompson because she was our avatar. Because I needed Jenny because I knew she was an influencer in the women entrepreneur community. Who I wanted more of her. Because let's face it, she's fantastic. And then that's how we end up, we do have great, great females. And now it is a balanced group, but it was Jenny who I recruited. I made her come. She kept saying no, and I finally made it impossible for her not to, converted her. And then we built the whole female thing off of her. So you might have to reach out.
And you did a lot of this too, right? Like you really promoted her, you know, demonstrated how good she was and how smart she was and all the things.
True, right?
I mean, it's all true. It's not like you're lying about her, but
I got her in and elevated her for sure.
Exactly. And that's all you have to do really in that situation. And then they'll do the rest, right? Whoever that person is. And, because you don't even have to introduce the devil to that person. They already know the devil.
Right.
And they'll bring it up for you. Like they'll be like, oh, this is so different. Right. I was opposed to really joining this group in the beginning too. Right. I'm just like, I don't need to be in another group, you know, like whatever. But then when I went, I was like, oh crap, this is like the antithesis of everything else that I hate.
Right.
So this is my group, right? I found my people, right?
So it's
elevated all those things, right? You did the same thing to me, right? And I'm just following the process. And I don't know how many people I've sent to Baby Bathwater now, but a bunch, you know, and that's the whole thing, right? You don't have to recruit anymore. You don't have to market in the same ways anymore, right? Because you've got all these people out there telling their individual stories and saying, let me pull my person in, right? Because, you know, I want them to hang out with us and see what's possible.
So organically, a lot of people, you have your true believers already. And let's say you want to expand, like Chris, you might want to reach out, find your ideal couple, common sense, you know, women, and recruit them in.
Well, and I would also ask too, like, who are the spouses or girlfriends of the people that are already in here,
right,
who are following this thing, and say, you know, let them become obvious, right? Because a lot of times those people who are the most ardent are actually behind the scenes, right? They're the ones like they're, you know, in this case, like their husband or boyfriend is out here like being thermo, and they're just like, dude, I'm losing all this weight. My friends are jealous and all these things are happening for me. I've never felt better, but they're not telling anybody. But then the minute that you find out about them, or you ask their boyfriend about them, they're like, yeah, look at what my girlfriend did. You know, she's done all this kind of stuff. And then you bring her in, then it's easy.
Stop to all your thermo guys and get there and see if their girlfriends are doing it. Anyway, you can do a lot of that to expand your group, and you do have to reach out a little bit. It's not so organic, but I think it'd be worth your time. And anybody here with a group that wants to make it more diverse with the same ideology, though, you're not giving up ideology. Right. It might be worthwhile to find the perfect umzu female or two.
There's quite a few of them in the group right now where they'll talk about like, oh, you know, my girlfriend and I cook every night together and she's loving it and blah, blah, blah. So, yeah. And there are women in the group too. They're just not as comfortable being on camera as the guys are.
Well, you just might have to recruit an influencer who is comfortable, who's a perfect, you know, you get it.
Who makes them feel comfortable, right? Makes it feel okay for them. And yep. That's all you got. But you only need one or two. You don't need many, right? You just need somebody else who's like them, and then they'll do the rest, right? They'll come out of the shadows.
I agree. Yeah. Shadows. Well, thank you, Dave. I know we're going over. This is fun. And I've been just, you know, our little company is working with Umzu now. It's been really fun because they have everything. Anyway, they have things set up right. It's fun to play.
Absolutely. So anybody who wants, you know, like I know we went through a lot of this stuff fast. If you want to get down to brass tacks and stuff, ask questions inside the group or, you know, shoot me an email, call me, whatever you want. I'm happy to help anyone like apply this directly to your company. So however I can help you, anybody in this group, I'm thrilled to help however I can.
Very cool. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, man.
Thank you.
Cheers.
All right. See you guys.